Hi, everyone, and welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. My name is Peggy Ployer, and I'm the host of this weekly broadcast put on by Sped Homeschool, as well as its founder and CEO. We at Sped Homeschool empower families to home educate children with learning challenges, and I encourage you to check out our website at spedhomeschool.com to learn about more about the resources that we offer and support that we give to families. And some of the best resources are on our YouTube channel as well as our website. So I encourage you to check out both those as well as our podcast channel and the number one special needs homeschooling blog, which is on our website as well. So, but every month we at Sped Homeschool focus on a different main topic, and we try to build in the new content that we're creating to be around that topic. And so this month we're focusing on homeschooling and medical issues. And I know a lot of people are sick right now, and so it just seems to be a really good time to focus on this. And so we brainstormed about this a long time ago. But just know that all of our conversations on this show this month are going to be focusing around that topic, as well as all of our new blogs. And so if you see a post on Facebook, on Instagram, various places, you'll see that our podcasts, our broadcasts, as well as our blogs are all focused on homeschooling and medical issues. That doesn't mean that that's all the content we have. We have a lot of content. We've been around since 2017 doing this. And so just search through our libraries if you're looking for other topics. But today I'm super excited to share with you on a topic that we have never addressed before, and that's homeschooling with diabetes, with a child with diabetes. And we focused a lot sometimes on homeschooling issues and mom's health, which is an important thing. I totally agree with that. But we want to focus on just how do you navigate a lot with having a child with medical needs and just things in your home, but then adding homeschooling on top of that and doing it well. And so I'm super excited to have Stacy. Stacy, I forgot to ask you how you say your last name. Is it Wolking?
Just Wolking, yeah.
Okay, awesome. Well, Stacy's with us. She is a consultant with HSLDA, but I just want to thank you, Stacy, for joining us and taking time out of your very busy schedule to talk with us today.
Oh, I am just delighted to be here.
Yeah, you are welcome. Could you start off by just sharing a bit about you and your family so our audience can get to know you?
Absolutely. So we have four kids. We homeschooled from the beginning through graduation. I loved homeschooling. I'm probably a teacher at heart. I love teaching.
Uh-huh.
But now they're all grown, married, having kids, homeschooling their own kids, which is amazing to watch.
Wow.
We've been blessed with 9 grandchildren so far.
That's amazing.
And some are local. 2 families are local. 2 are very far away out on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. So it's hard being away from, you know, the grandkids. But over the years, we were involved in many homeschool co-ops, classes, activities. I was very heavily involved with our local support group and became the co-coordinator and, you know, scheduled speakers and things for the mom's group. I love mentoring, encouraging, supporting, you know, the younger homeschool moms. And now I'm an educational consultant for HSLDA, and I get paid to do what I love to do, which is
mentoring, like such
encouraging.
A good fit. Yes.
It's perfect for me. Yes. So it's pretty great to be able to continue that legacy of, you know, just sharing just experiences, good and bad, you know.
Right.
It's
yes.
not like we're
yep.
experts by any stretch. It's just yep. we've learned a lot of things the hard way.
Yes, that is very true. You just get up and you keep going. And that's good encouragement to start with, because I think a lot of times we see people who have homeschooled a long time and we go, wow, they're just like perfect. And I remember doing that myself. And now having lived and homeschooled as long as I have, I'm like, no, that perfection never happens. We just get better at picking ourselves up and saying, well, learn from that one.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I definitely think the biggest thing is learning to relax a little bit more. I'm definitely more relaxed now than I was then.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I tell my daughters and my daughters-in-laws, you know, just enjoy them.
Yeah.
Relax, You know, it's easy for me to say, though, right?
Right, exactly. You don't have that parent anxiety that you're going to mess them up and all the other things society will tell you. Right. It's true. So we have some viewers, and I just want you to know, if you're watching live and you have a comment or question, you want to say where you're watching from, we would love to see that in the feed. You can comment. If you're watching on our Podia site, that's the Empowering Homeschool Network, you actually have to click into YouTube in order to comment. So I'll add that. And also, if you're watching on our Facebook support group, you have to allow our StreamYard platform the ability to post your name when you make a comment. So those are the only two caveats. If you're watching directly on YouTube or on our Facebook page, you can just post and we'll see those comments right away. So awesome. Well, let's dive into some of the questions that we've kind of pulled together, and then we'll build in any as people comment as well. But when did diabetes enter your family, and what are some common misconceptions people have about type 1 diabetes and the seriousness of that condition?
Oh, well, okay. The day that changed our life, you know, I was a busy homeschool mom of a fifth grader, third grader, first grader, and a busy toddler.
Wow.
And it was in January. We had all just probably had a little virus or something, nothing big. Mm-hmm. But our two-year-old just wasn't bouncing back. She seemed off. Hmm. And she was just lethargic and clingy. And I just really didn't know what was going on. So, You know, it was a Tuesday. I remember so clear, you know, 20 something years ago, but you remember it was like it was yesterday. And I took her to the doctor. And of course, she's sitting on my lap. She's cute. She's perky. She's fun. And the doctor's like, she's probably fine. Hmm. And I really thought, well, maybe she had an ear infection or something. Because whenever I put her down, if I just had to, she would like lay on the floor and put her head on the cold, hard, you know, hardwood floor. And I thought, maybe she's got an earache or something.
Right.
So he checked her out. She was fine. So we went about our day, and I took my older son to basketball and sitting there watching his practice, and she wet through her diaper to my lap. And I thought, well, that's just bizarre. That's never happened before, except the weird thing is it had happened just a couple days before on Sunday for the first time. Mm-hmm. And my husband and I at church just kind of looked at each other as like, we thought, oh, one of us forgot to change her diaper as we're rushing out of the house.
Right, because you have so many kids.
And we just dismissed it totally as just, we forgot to do that. But here the second time, I knew that wasn't right. Something seemed off. And so we got home and I gave her a bath, and you know, for the first time, I just kind of looked at her and thought, you've lost weight. I just, I couldn't. So all these things just started kind of piecing together. And by the time I got her to bed, I honestly wasn't sure if she had passed out in my arms or if she'd fallen asleep, because she just was so lethargic. And so I was so worried. And right then, a friend from church called, and we were supposed to be doing the next day. There was some kind of big pastor's breakfast that we were involved with, our family. Uh-huh. And she called to ask about that. And I just told her, you know, something's not right. And so she prayed with me, and I just felt such an encouragement. And I hung up the phone, and I'm not kidding you, I had the thought, I wonder if she has diabetes.
Wow.
And I got to tell you, I don't know anything about diabetes. I'm not, that wasn't on my radar. Uh-huh. The only thing I knew about it was my dad's two sisters are diabetic. So my aunts, which I didn't see a lot. So all I knew was they were diabetic, and I didn't really know what that all entailed. So it was just such a bizarre thought. And I remembered that when I was right after I gave birth to her, I had had a real bad bout of hypoglycemia, and my doctor had given me one of those test kits. So I thought, well, I'm just going to pull that out of the closet. So I pulled it out. I cleaned it all up and recalibrated it. And my husband and I, we tested her while she was sleeping, just a, you know, finger prick. And immediately in 30 seconds, we're looking at, it was 500 or 600. I don't even know what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be 90, but you know, it was just, we knew. And I think it's one of those things where I think I kind of saw the big picture, like, oh, this is going to change our life. Whereas my husband was more like, oh, something's wrong. We got to go to the hospital. So it was just such a different perspective. But I went and called the doctor, and I happened to get the same one on call that I'd seen earlier in the day.
That's like
and
never happens. Was,
yes, exactly. And I told him I had tested her blood sugar. And he just He's like, you did what? I mean, he just was incredulous. Like, why would you do that? And I kind of walked him through, you know, well, I didn't think of all these things when I saw you this morning. I just started putting this together. Mm-hmm. And he's like, okay, well, you know, I'll call ahead. You get her to the ER and I'll let them know you're coming. And so we get there. They take us back immediately. They start her on an IV. She's just a dish rag. She is just completely lethargic. And, you know, they're coming in and out and talking, saying things to us and leaving. And we're still just bewildered. We're just like, what? And she came in and said something and she walked out. And my husband and I looked at each other. I was like, so does this mean she's diabetic? I mean, we still didn't have a grasp. And so then the nurse came back in and we asked her, so does this mean she, and she must have thought we were crazy. She's like, I thought you knew. The doctor told me you tested her blood sugar. And I'm like, well, we did, but we really weren't sure exactly what that meant.
Right.
She's like, yeah, she's diabetic.
Wow.
And it was like, wow. You know, it was just such a, okay. So here goes something.
Yeah.
So it just really started a big journey of, you just wouldn't believe. But you know what? You mentioned misconceptions and seriousness. And that is really a big deal because I'm not sure most people get the seriousness of type
one. Yeah. I think because we are so familiar with type two.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's not life threatening. And so they don't realize that type one is. And so, you know, a lot of people, there's different names for it. People call it juvenile diabetes, diabetes mellitus, or insulin dependent diabetes. Those are all the same thing.
Okay.
But it's really a life altering, lifelong condition where the pancreas stops making insulin. Insulin is a vital hormone that allows your body to process sugar and fuel and your food for energy.
Right.
Without insulin, you'll die. Your body just won't be able to use anything and basically you'll just waste away. Before insulin was invented in 1921, people literally just wasted away. It usually took a couple years and they would just basically starve to death while they're eating.
They would
No sack. But people do confuse the type one with type two, which type two, you know, is called adult onset.
Right.
But type one absolutely cannot be cured. There's nothing that can be done to reverse it. It's not a lifestyle issue. But thankfully, there is a lot that can be done to manage it well. And so, you know, that's the good news. Things have definitely changed. People probably remember like an older relative with terrible complications, you know, blindness or kidney failure, neuropathy, even amputations. And these were caused by long-term having high blood sugar and unmanaged diabetes. So these kind of complications are very rare now because of medical advances. So they really don't know a lot about type 1 or why it happens. It is believed to be familial, which is not the same as hereditary. We were told it skips generations. My dad's, as I mentioned, my dad's two sisters have it. But interestingly, my dad, his brother, and his sister all have granddaughters with type one.
Interesting.
So it definitely, you know, we definitely saw that skip generation thing. So, you know, I just don't know.
Something they say that, you know, like the there's a genetics and then there's a genetic trigger, because the same thing happened with my breast cancer, too. It's like, well, we don't see it in your genetics, but for some reason, all three, you know, there's three of my cousins and myself who all got breast cancer, the same as my grandmother. And it was something that flipped that switch. And
isn't that something? Yeah.
It is what it is. But to have it on your radar when you do have relatives that have had it is a good thing to remember, and and that it is something that can be, you know, is age two pretty, I can't say, I mean, do kids get diagnosed that young?
I think on that's a regular basis? I think that's a little bit more on the unusual side. I think I read somewhere that, you know, more common is, late elementary and then during the teen years, you know, but certainly babies even have been diagnosed. I'm trying to think, like my cousin's daughter, I think she was, pretty sure she was like five Wow. So, you mm-hmm. know, who right. knows, but yeah, it's mm-hmm. definitely more common in a little bit older children. And they say right. they can even be diagnosed when they're 30 and still be called juvenile diabetes. Oh, okay. So
just because of
they don't the really have a magic number.
Itself. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure that it was named the way it was named because of the onset average and, you know,
yeah. exactly.
So, yeah. Yeah. So, we have one viewer who's, let us know where she's watching from. Christine's watching from Huntsville, Alabama. Welcome, Christine. Glad to have you watching our show. And I see we have a couple other viewers, too. If you want to pop on, say hi, that'd be great. Also, if you have some questions or comments as well, we'd love to make that part of our conversation as we just continue through the questions we put together. So what things have helped you the most as a parent of a child with type 1 diabetes that could maybe help other parents who face this diagnosis or, you know, similar medical challenges that are as life-threatening? I think sometimes there's a lot of crossover and yeah, there's probably absolutely. A lot of things that you have done that would be helpful to know about as well.
Well, I will say God has such a sense of humor. He gave a diabetic child to this needle-phobic mother. So when she was diagnosed, it was quite throwing me for a loop.
We
were admitted to the hospital in the middle of the night. Doctor told me they would be teaching me, and I would mm-hmm. give her my first shot first thing in the morning. Ooh. I mean, I can't tell you.
Did you sleep at all that night?
No, I did not. I was distraught. How in the world was I going to do that? I mm-hmm. couldn't even fathom holding a syringe mm-hmm. in my hand. I mm-hmm. had so much baggage. This is my personal story, but from my mm-hmm. childhood, that my childhood was filled with surgeries, long hospital mm-hmm. stays, dreaded mm-hmm. lots of needle sticks. And as I sat there in the dark holding this my sleeping baby's hand, I just sobbed and just mm-hmm. cried out to God. But you know, as we all know, God is so kind and gracious, mm-hmm. and He really gave me an amazing gift that night. Mm-hmm. He showed me something that really changed everything for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it didn't fix it over, you know, it yeah. was still really hard, uh-huh. but in my mind, I mean, I'm sitting there in the dark in the hospital room, and in my mind, I saw a window open. And in an instant, it's like I saw every awful medical moment of my childhood. Mm. And I clearly heard God tell me that all of that was in preparation for this moment so that I would be the best mother to care for my sweet baby.
Oh,
it was really a life-changing moment for me.
Yeah.
And for the first time in my life, I really could thank God for a lifetime of my medical challenges, which, you know, that's a big deal to, right. not that I ever blamed him or complained, but at the same right. time, there is always that, you know, why me kind of thing, even though yeah. you hope you're yeah. not doing that, mm-hmm. but yeah. there's a little bit of that, but mm-hmm. here I had my answer. I mean, I just felt like right. it was a gift to be mm-hmm. Able to be prepared for her. So, you yeah. know, I was comfortable with hospitals and, you know, all that. I mean, not with the needle part, but, and you know, God used it to help me get over that eventually. Mm. I mean, it was, you never really get over it, but it, you know, it got me through. Uh-huh. So yeah, He's just so good. So, and He taught yeah. me some other things. He, mm-hmm. He really used diabetes to teach me some other major life lessons. One particularly that really carried over into other aspects of my life. I could do everything right. And I really think listeners could relate to this, because when you're doing diabetes, you're trying to get it right. You know, you're doing the care, you're counting the carbs, right, you're dosing the insulin.
Yep.
And I could do everything right and it could still come out wrong, meaning her blood sugars would be high or low or crazy.
Right.
And it was really a great lesson on doing the best you can and trusting God for the outcome.
Right.
And that's a hard thing to really embrace, but it really applies to parenting and homeschooling.
Exactly.
And, you know, there's a freedom in that, you know, because it helps you to just trust Him, to not have it all on your own shoulders, which, you know, we know we carry a lot. So that was very helpful for me.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting. I was reading Psalm 37 this morning, and in the verses I was reading, I can't remember the exact ones. I think it's like 26 and 27, but it may be wrong. But it talks about how we will stumble and fall. But then God says, I will have your hand.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, yes, he already knows we are going to stumble. There's going to be places that are going to be too hard to stay upright, but yet he never lets go. Absolutely. And that's important to remember that he's always there.
Well, another lesson that I could really, I think it would help parents to know what to expect is, and I wish I could remember when this was. I think she was probably, maybe we were 6 to 12 months in after she was diagnosed. Mm-hmm. We were doing okay. It was hard, but we were learning how to manage it. And for the most part, doing well. But I found myself regularly having episodes of absolutely falling apart and not being able to. And I'm usually pretty together. So this was really bothering me that I was having such a hard time handling it. And I am so grateful for a dear friend of the Grow Off group. She told me, nothing's wrong with you. I was grieving. No. It can't be grief. My daughter didn't die. And she assured me that we can go through significant grief without anyone dying. And I had never thought about that before. I realized I was grieving the loss of a normal life and the loss of date nights and the loss of a family stomping for impromptu ice cream. I was grieving the knowledge that our daughter would have a lifetime of needles and carb counting and high risk pregnancies. You know, I was all those things. And, you know, I was so thankful for her counsel because it helped me immensely just realizing what this was, identifying it. And because of that knowledge, I was able to stop being so hard on myself.
Yes.
And I could just let myself grieve.
Yeah.
And over time, the episodes got, you know, further and further apart. And, you know, and not to say they didn't come back at a later time, but at least I knew what it was. And and I just think if someone hadn't told me that, I think I would have driven myself crazy trying to, you know, just being hard on myself.
Right. Because, don't you have your act together? I mean, these are the things that we say in our heads. We don't say them out loud, of course, except maybe to a good friend. But but yes, and it is. And for every parent of a struggling child, whatever that child struggles with, whether it's medical, educational, physical, we have to grieve. And if we don't allow ourselves to go through that grieving process, it makes it worse.
Absolutely. So if you're so dealing you with this diagnosis or another, you know, medical issue, go easy on yourself. It's a lot to deal with. Give yourself grace. You know, we're already giving so much as we're homeschooling our children.
Right.
And I always said that diabetes pretty much used up the rest of the few brain cells I had left, you know, because you're just juggling a lot.
Yeah.
And frankly, we had to learn a new way of life, including how to manage food and blood testing and shots.
Right.
And to be honest, it's draining. It's exhausting. And I know other families with, you know, special needs children feel that way. It really takes an emotional toll to for diabetes, particularly to always be vigilant. And on, I just felt like I was in high alert all the time for behavior and blood sugar, you know, highs and lows.
Right. You were a detective on top of being a parent.
Exactly. Before I could even discipline her, I'd have to check her blood sugar just to be sure that her out of range blood sugar wasn't part of this behavioral issue, you know? And that's, wow, that just opens up a whole nother, you know, can of worms.
We our viewer on YouTube, Christina, says it's also a lack of sleep, grieving, guilt. We didn't catch it sooner, thinking we ourselves can find a cure. I'll contribute to the losing it. She's at least for me.
Yeah. Oh my, Christina. Yeah. You just can't. You can't go there as far as wish we'd found it sooner. I mean, everything's in God's time, but there's just it's so subtle. You know, I mean, I was just, we were blessed with, you know, just somehow the right moment. But I do know a lot of people go through a long time of misdiagnosing or underdiagnosing. And something people don't realize too is that when in the beginning, when you're first diagnosed, they call it the honeymoon period, but basically some of the, you're still producing a little bit of insulin. Oh, so a lot of times they'll wake up in the morning, like when I took her to the doctor that morning and she wasn't that bad. But by evening, after she's eaten a lot of, you know, eaten or drank juice or whatever, it's shot her blood sugar up. But earlier in the day, they kind of get a fresh start because their body kind of resets overnight and does produce some. So that can really make the diagnosis even harder because, you know, you start every day and they're doing better and you think, okay, we're good. And then by evening, they're not good. And it can really be a hard thing. The last struggle I wanted to share was just, I felt for us, one of the hardest things was finding the right balance between teaching our kids about diabetes, you know, all our kids, not just
and
scaring them about the seriousness and even the life and death nature of diabetes. I mean, this is a really tough call, and I would bet my kids would say I probably, you know, scared them, but you almost felt like you had to because they had to understand how serious, you know, a mistake could be or, you know, it's just so, and to be honest, I still don't really know where that line is between that, but I know you have to educate them. And I know when my kids were older, we all sat down and watched Steel Magnolias. I don't know if you've seen that movie.
Yeah, but I haven't.
It's as an adult, she passes away from diabetes. I mean, it was set way back, so it was before care was as good as it is now. But, you know, it was just helping them. I thought it was a good idea. They were older. They were, you know, teens or whatever. But I think some of them think it scarred them or something. So I feel so bad. You know, you try. I don't.
Yeah,
We're just moms. We do the best we can.
Exactly. Christy Horder is watching on Facebook and she says, hi, ladies. Thanks for bringing this important subject to the table. Yeah, thank you for watching, Christy. it is important to go over those things because we can beat ourselves up. We cannot know, you know, things that are going on. And with any diagnosis, I know I didn't realize my middle child had dyslexia until he was 16. And, you know, I can do these interviews now every week and learn about all these things, you know, to look for when kids are young. And I can either beat myself up or say, you know what, this is just when I'm learning it and it's going to help somebody else. It wasn't there for me, but that's okay. My son is doing fine.
Absolutely. And you know what, even if we don't get it when they're kids, I mean, I have a friend whose son, after he graduated high school, you know, he went and got himself ADD meds and it helped him. And it's nothing she realized was a need. And so there's no reason to, you know, beat ourselves up because God will work it out in his time.
Exactly.
And, you know, we only have what we have. So I just, it's so important that we not be harder on ourselves than we already are. I mean, I talk to women every day that are just so hard on themselves. And that's our biggest, you know, that's our biggest obstacle, I think, is just
it is
really fighting that. Mm-hmm. I have a book on my shelf, Lies Women Believe.
Right. Yes.
We all do it.
So. Yeah. And just finding that joy that in the day that we have versus the things that we wish we'd have had or seen or, you know, looking back so much versus looking forward and right where we're at. It's so key. So in addition to those things, what advice do you have about living well through type 1 diabetes?
You know, first and foremost, if you don't already have one, find a great endocrinologist. It is so important. It's totally worth a very long drive, if that's what it takes, every three months or so.
Wow.
Get to a teaching hospital that's up on the latest and greatest diabetes technology and care. Because I have talked to families that, you know, just go to their local endo and really just isn't up on the latest. And the quality of their life and the quality of their care is so not as good as it could be. And so it is just, I just think it's critical. And it's worth, like I said, driving a couple hours if you have to, you know, find a good hospital. So at the time we were living in Northern Kentucky, now we're here in Northern Virginia, but we were living in Northern Kentucky and we would drive the 45 minutes to Cincinnati Children's Hospital. And we saw Nurse Nancy. We saw her every 3 months for 8 years until we moved away. And she, sometimes I truly believe maybe she was an angel because she was just a gift to us. She was so patient and kind. She really made an impact on all our lives. You know, my daughter didn't dread going to her visit, even though there was usually a stick involved. But, you know, she loved seeing Nurse Nancy. And, you know, it was just, she was really such a support system for me and so encouraging. So if a mom, you know, goes somewhere and you leave there feeling bad about how you're doing it, find someone else because there's so many good people out there that can really build you up, bolster you and help you to through this. You know, there's a lot of change. And the exciting thing was because they were, you know, I don't know about cutting edge, but they were, you know, definitely up there. You know, they were willing to step out. And she was two. And when she was five, so 3 years later, they offered her to go on the insulin pump, which is a huge step up in the ability to manage it. And they said they never had anybody this young that they would even consider letting be on the pump. But because she was homeschooled, and she was going to be home and I could monitor because there is more risk involved with it. You know, it's giving her insulin without me, you know, doing a shot. And so, but they felt like, you know, we were a good candidate. So I was, you know, I felt like that wouldn't have even happened, you know, somewhere else. And it did dramatically improve her life and our lives. And so it was a great change.
I never would have thought about how advantageous homeschooling would be for medical procedures that would, you know, help a child with excelling in overcoming or at least dealing with their medical issue versus, you know, just a lot of times we think of, well, you know, it's a nice workaround with, you know, homeschooling just kind of accommodates, but it actually, in your situation, made it an even better situation than it could have been.
And absolutely. So, I could not even fathom sending my diabetic child to school. I don't know how people did it over the years. You know, it's weird is when I was a child, I remember a little girl in my elementary class that was diabetic, only person I ever knew. And she was very quiet and didn't, you know, very much kept to herself. But, you know, I think someone came every day and gave her a shot or something. I'm not sure how that worked. But, you know, I just remember, boy, how lonely for her because, you know, it definitely wasn't as common back then as it is now. So, so another thought I had was if there's two parents in the home, it's so important for both to be involved in the diabetes management. And recognize you're not going to see it the same way. I was amazed at how many times we just, you know, my husband and I just saw things differently. You know, and Nurse Nancy helped a lot with, you know, kind of helping us work through that, which is fabulous.
That mediator.
Things like, I mean, of course it's not best, but honestly, it's pretty tempting to serve the family prepared or processed food. Because guess what? All the carb information is on the package. Versus every time I made a recipe, which I cooked a lot, I had to calculate out the whole recipe. I had to figure out the carb per serving. I had to, and that's just a lot, you know, to figure out how much dosing to give her of the insulin. And it had to be accurate, you know? So it's just something like that where you think, oh, so much, it would be so much easier, but it wouldn't be best, you know, for my family. Another example is it's very easy to get caught up in the fear of the low blood sugars and not want your child to exercise because it can dramatically affect their blood sugar, even after the fact. So often if they have a busy active day, they'll go low at night. So that's a big stress. And you know, if she had a lot of activity in the day, we would set an alarm clock and get up and test her in the night. because that fear is always there. You know, and so you just have to, but you can't let, you can't say, oh, I don't want her to go out and play.
Right. Yes.
So
exactly.
it's a battle, you know, that you're almost fighting with yourself because yes, it makes it a little harder for us and, and it, you know, definitely adds to some of the risk, but you know, it's, you gotta let them, you know, we tried to raise her, you know, as normal as possible for her sake, you know?
Yeah. And but it seems like you worked systems into that, you know, knowing what typical schedules and needs that you had to, like with cooking, you knew that you had to tack on extra time to calculate when exercise happened. You knew that you needed to set the alarm. So you developed processes within your own home.
Yeah.
And that seems to be, you know, a good way to think about it versus, oh, we've got to do this again. Well, it's just a new process. It's just like adding something to your homeschool schedule.
that's a perfect segue into what my last point was going to be. Embrace your new normal for your family. I've talked to parents that are still kind of waiting for life to get back to normal. But it never will. You just, diabetes and any other medical issue, it changes everything. So my advice is rather than fighting against the changes, try to reimagine a new joy-filled life that includes diabetes.
Right.
We just have to. But I love that. Yeah. Add those processes and then it won't feel like you're reinventing the wheel every day. You're just like, okay, if she does this, we do this. That's great advice.
Yeah. Well, and I know when I was diagnosed with cancer, I was put on a vegan diet. And so a lot of people, that's the way I eat now. Yes. And I have no sugar and no gluten.
Wow.
But for the longest time, people were saying, well, how do you replace this? And I said, I don't. I make something completely void of trying to replicate what I used to have, and I enjoy it much better. You know, I find the challenge in, I don't like the challenge when everybody wants to go out to eat and I can't eat anything where we go. but then there's, you know, this, I don't want to have to recreate a hamburger. I want something that is what it is instead of trying to look like something that you're eating that I really shouldn't be eating anyways.
But
embracing that and the difference of it, and it can be exciting and it's an adventure for sure.
That's a great way of counting it. Yes.
Yeah. So what advice do you have for homeschooling, parenting other siblings and maintaining a healthy marriage amidst these unexpected medical ups and downs?
Yeah. Well, as with all parents struggling, you know, to homeschool amidst any kind of medical issue, we worked hard to make sure our other three kids got the plenty of attention. Everything wasn't always about, you know, diabetes. I do think it's really important that we be careful to not expect too much from other siblings or older siblings. You know, it's asking them to provide care or, you know, unless they're like super comfortable with it. I get it. It's tempting. You want help from them. It's hard. You know, we never left her side for years.
Wow.
No date nights, no getaways. I mean, you know, you don't have somebody that knows how to do all that.
Right.
Diabetes care is serious and, you know, literally an insulin dosing mistake could, you know, be fatal. I mean, I hate to talk about the bad side, but you got to think about that. So that's a lot for kids to handle. And it might be too much for some kids, but other kids might be not too stressed by it. And so when our other daughter was a teen, she offered to help some. And she's just kind of that personality that didn't have
kind of the internal caregiver.
And she was 4.5 years older than, you know, the younger sister. And she was super responsible. She is super responsible and capable. And so we were grateful to to be able to leave the house even for just short times. So that did, you know, that definitely helped. But I was very cautious about it. And, you know, our sons, you know, that didn't feel comfortable to them. And, you know, there was no pressure to do that. So I just think we have to remember that it's, you know, you do talk to siblings sometimes who say too much was put on them. And I just think that's something we always have to be aware of, you know,
that's that we, very true.
Mm-hmm. As hard as it is, because we really want,
but diving into that gifting too, like for your daughter, that probably was something that she, you know, it benefited her and allowed her to use those gifts too within your home. So it can go both ways.
Right.
And you can wear your kids out on a lot of things, even good things.
Absolutely. Well, and I want everybody, every parent to know, you know, don't try to do it alone. Enlist support. Mm. I mean, we didn't, you know, I made it sound like we didn't have any support, but we did, but it's not the same as having somebody that can step in and do all those things.
Right.
Of course, you know, try to educate your friends and family. There's a lot of misinformation out there, so it's important for you to share, you know, what, you know, about your particular situation. If you can, train someone else to test, you know, blood sugars, give shots, change pump sites, reload the insulin, all that stuff. Yeah. I am very thankful. I mean, you know, I see how friends stepped in my life at different times and just really made a difference. And so for the parents out there who maybe don't have a diabetes child, maybe they know somebody, you know, the greatest gift you can give someone is to step up and, you know, support them. It is such a heavy burden, you know, any kind of medical issue. It's just it's a 24/7, never goes away. And just having friends come along and do whatever so small thing, it is so great. So 3 years in, I told you we went to the pump. And so I was scheduled to go get training in how to put the site in. It's like putting a needle under the skin. It's not, kind of like an IV, but it's not in a vein. It's just under the skin, but you know, it's still putting a needle in there and you leave it. It's a catheter. So it, you know, stayed in connect to the pump. This is back in the, well, I guess they still haven't, but it was a tubed pump. So it was a tube to the pump. Okay. Now she has a tubeless pump. So it just sits on her without the tube. But anyway, so I was going and a friend offered to go with me to Cincinnati Children's. And it was just huge that she offered. I would have never asked, but it was just huge that she went with me and just was there. You know, she learned about it. It was just such a great support. And it just meant the world to me. And our angel nurse, Nancy, she even had me practice putting it in her, like in her tummy. Like, you know, so she was an amazing support. It's like, and I'm like, I can't do this. And I was like, I remember that I like holding it in front of her tummy for the longest time. Like I couldn't make myself do it. Oh. And she slapped my hand to make it go in. It's like, oh man, I couldn't have done that. But she was amazing. So, but yeah, just if, you know, if you have a friend.
It sounds like you were just surrounded by the support you needed.
Really was. And I feel so blessed by that. And I know that not everybody has that support. And, you know, and so it is, well, this kind of leads to my next point because, you know, even if you don't have like those close friends like that, but maybe find somebody, I mean, like purposely look for somebody else that has diabetes in your, you know, community, your church, your homeschool networks, whatever.
Right. And a lot of times it's maybe through like a nurse, Nancy, you know,
good point. Yes,
and just ask them, do you know somebody else that, that has a child about the same age?
Absolutely. I mean, they say like one in 400 now have diabetes. So there's gotta be someone somewhere, you know, but just making, you know, that connection. And so maybe it's making that friend and then you have somebody that maybe you could leave your child with for an hour or two as a play date, you know, but at least knew that they knew how to take care of it. And remember, every parent's going to do it differently. So it's not going to be
exactly how you do it.
But it's still, you know, huge, but it's huge for the kids too. I really believe that they need that. It makes them feel normal when there's somebody else that has the same thing they do. And I do think we have to find that for them. You know, your child might feel like it's a little weird or awkward to just approach somebody. Hey, you got diabetes. Can we be friends? But, but sometimes you just got to do that. And you could always couch it as we're reaching out to someone who's newly diagnosed and we're there to lend our support for both the child and the parent.
Right.
But really kids need a diabetes friend to assure them they're not alone. help normalize it. Yeah. You know, and, you know, there's a lot of diabetes events out there, you
really?
Know, the JDRF, mm-hmm. you know, Juvenile Diabetes Research mm-hmm. Foundation. And those are great, but it's not for every kid, you mm-hmm. know? So yeah. take the lead from your child. If they don't want to get in the mm-hmm. big, you know, like where they're in a place where there's 100 kids, you know, maybe right. that doesn't feel yes. good to them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let them decide on that. But do, you know, do try mm-hmm. to find somebody, you know, actually we reached out to somebody that we heard through the homeschool network, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that we heard was newly diagnosed, and her daughter was, our daughters were pretty much the same age, but they were teens. So mm-hmm. our, you know, my daughter had been a long time and
right.
she was new, and we didn't run in the same homeschool circles, but I mm-hmm. reached out and we got together and we just, you know, talked and right. whatever. And, you know, the girls are still friends, you know, many
oh,
years
awesome.
Later. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's, definitely has been helpful, I think, for her. And then as she's gotten mm-hmm. older, she's, gotten into online, networking with yeah. other diabetic mm-hmm. children or adults. Yeah. And teens, whatever, you know, whatever stage she was in. And that's helped mm-hmm. a lot, because then you're talking to other kids, even though it's online, and I'm, you know, we're all social media conscious.
I know.
Get that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if there's any time and place for it, mm-hmm. it's something like this, where they right. really can connect mm-hmm. with others like them. And yeah. I know that's, you know, helped her a lot.
That's good. Yeah. It's so good to have support. And it's good to be reminded that we have to work for relationships, and they don't just happen. You know, we want to just join a co-op and all of our, you know, have all these new friends. And a lot of times when we have kids that struggle, we have one or two connections, but those are meaningful, deep connections that we have to go out and pursue. But it's worth the pursuit, and it does, it pays back for years. I know I started called a pod now, but not when we were, you know, homeschooling right, at right. the beginning. it was just called a couple of families getting together. But there's where the longest lasting relationships and kids that, you know, other kids on the spectrum for my kids to be able to have relationships with. So yeah, that's really good advice. Thank you for reminding us that it's so important. And
well,
just how
and
much
I
that's
do,
blessed your
I
family.
Do want to remind, you know, teens, that's a whole nother, whole nother mm-hmm. world. and it was different for us because she had grown up with it versus I, you know, see families that they're diagnosed as a teen. And so that's a very different dynamic. Often when they're diagnosed with a teen, the teen is taking full ownership of it right off the bat.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Whereas for us, you know, it was a process mm-hmm. where we had to be constantly reminded to pass on more ownership of it to her. And yeah. it was yeah. definitely a struggle, you know, that mm-hmm. that safe balance between a teen wanting to do it themselves and them not really doing it well.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Again, I don't know the answer to that one other than you just have to be aware that.
Right. Yes.
Because sometimes when you hold on tighter, they get, yeah. it's mm-hmm. just like any other area. They're yeah. going to fight it more. So it's just something to be aware that it's coming.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Christine had added that Facebook groups for whatever diet style you approach diabetes with are great for parents, like Let Me Be 83 and Type 1 Normal. So those are ones I know yeah. nothing about because, you know, this
either.
Is...
Maybe my daughter knows about them. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
great. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we didn't have any of that back when, you know, I was raising the kids.
Right. So. Exactly. I always talk about how there was two books in existence about high-functioning autism. My son was diagnosed. Nothing on the internet because the internet basically almost didn't exist.
now,
but that's dating us. Yes.
So amazing.
I know.
We're out there. It's great. Yeah. Well,
exactly.
And lastly, you know, don't forget to, you know, pray for your child's future spouse.
Yes.
We are so thankful for our son-in-law. He is very involved. He will give shots, change pump sites. He just totally supports her.
Wow.
And, you know, that makes all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but part of it is her. She let him into that world.
Right.
And not
exactly.
just, okay, this is what I do, you know. And so, you know, I would encourage people to, you know, really make sure that they do include the spouse, mm-hmm. You know, because it doesn't have to all rest on your shoulders.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I would say that attributes to your family's approach as well, is that you made it, you know, function within your family. So when, you know, she's looking for a spouse, that kind of is in the back of their heads, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. this is a lifestyle that's just going to go with me. and so I just want to commend you too for, you know, making it that part of your family, as you've been talking mm-hmm. about too. So.
Well, now she's an amazing mama of a delightful 10-month-old. She's so sweet. And of course, my husband and I certainly don't do much, but we do try to support her in any way we can. And, you know, every night for 20 plus years, last thing before going to bed, my hubby would test her blood sugar while she was sleeping. He always joked that he would be calling her on her honeymoon to find out what her blood sugar was. Oh. He didn't, I promise. But the irony is that now we have technology that links her. She has a Dexcom, so it's a continuous glucose monitor. It links it to our phones. Mm-hmm. She's all the way across the country, but we get alerts on our phone if her blood sugar goes too low.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can try to call her or whatever, but we really appreciate that additional safety because well, her military husband has gone a lot. So, you know, it's nice for her to have that connection, but you know, it amazes me. The technology is so, just such a part of it now. I never would have dreamed, you know, that was going to be.
I thought it was crazy. I wrote an IP, not an IP. Yeah, it was an IP, and a request for accommodations on the ACT for a student with type 1 diabetes, because they had to bring their phone in with them because it was hooked to their monitor. Right. And normally you can't bring your phone in with you. And so so that would have, you know, never happened 5-10 years ago. And now that's a new accommodation that has to be allowed for medical purposes.
Absolutely.
So all those wonderful apps now that we have on our phones that help with all those things. Well, Christine had one more point, and she added that their endocrinologist said that his whole senior year he had to do his own self-care. And she said a friend of mine's looking into getting a diabetic alert dog for her college-bound daughter. So, yeah, there's a lot of different resources out there that just help with that transition. Like you said, you know, for every child, it's going to be different because they're just different. You can't say, well, this is this year, and, you know, you know, I could say that for all of my kids. This is the plan I have for you, but whether or not it came about, you know, and that's how they actually transitioned. Didn't always look the way I wanted it to.
That's right. Well, those are some great ideas that, you know, I hadn't thought of, like, just the specifically. I'm glad the doctor is really pushing that. Like, senior year, you need to do it yourself because we don't want to wait till he goes off to college potentially and then have to do it himself. So smart to be thinking ahead like that.
Christine asked, how do we get that for testing? Do you have a template? So we have a template for a homeschool IEP on our website at spedhomeschool.com. If you just write that as an accommodation for your students throughout their high school years, so you'll have a history of IEPs of your student needing that phone, and that's how they test their blood sugar on a regular basis. Then when you request for services, and actually Stacy's very good at this. This is what you do for a job. So I'm going to have you add to what I add. But when you request through the College Board for accommodations, they're going to not only ask you for the diagnosis, but they're going to ask you for past history of that accommodation. And so you'll have that already written up in an IEP. So what else would you have to add?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to mention that, number one, if you're a member of HSLDA, you can call and talk to the special needs consultants at any time, and they will walk you through getting accommodations, definitely. But typically, if you don't already have an IEP, I mean, it doesn't mean you can't still get the accommodation. So there are accommodation forms on the College Board website. And, you know, just specifically giving that, obviously you'd want the documentation that they were diagnosed with diabetes, but I'm not sure that they would need, you know, the IEP if it's not something they've already done.
Right. Yeah. And for this student, they, I think it was a brand new technology about the time that that came out, and they needed to be convinced that this child really needed this phone. Oh, and wow. So proving some history that, that yes. this was a necessary yes. medical device, was kind of what we were doing. So I'm, gotcha. I'm assuming it probably nowadays, it may be a little more, they've seen it a bit more. Than
I would agree.
Then.
Yeah. I think it's gotten a little easier maybe, mm-hmm. but so definitely do that way in advance. It takes time to go through the accommodations process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you've got to work it out with your local testing facilitator as well. It's not just the College Board. It has to, and a lot of them will be really sticky with you because it happens in the public schools. So, yeah, that's a whole nother hour to more topic.
Yes, it is.
So, Stacey, as we're wrapping up, I would love you to talk a little bit about HSLDA, the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, and just what the consultants do and how that's a benefit of HSLDA membership.
Yeah, absolutely. It is such a privilege to work with HSLDA. They've been around for almost 40 years, protecting your right to homeschool and making homeschooling yes. possible in so many different ways. We have an incredible website with so much really valuable information. We have over 100,000 members strong, and we support members through legal assistance, legal representation. But then we have this incredible team of educational consultants that cover all areas. We have our pre-K through 8th, we have our high school consultants, and we have our special needs consultants. And so there's up on the screen, you can see just some of the many high school, educational consultants that we have. And we're all here just to support you through, you know, phone or email. As a matter of fact, you know, if anybody wanted to call and talk to me, I'd love to talk with you and connect with you about the diabetes issue, but or anything else that's going on for you. Yeah, but
that's an awesome benefit of being a member of HSLDA. I know, remember when I was really struggling. I mean, we've been members of HSLDA from the beginning, but Diane Kraft. she poured a lot into my life.
Our original educational consultant.
Yes, and she ended up being my mentor even after that.
Oh,
so,
wonderful.
Yes.
What a gift. Yeah. Yeah. Well, these ladies are just amazing. So,
yes. Awesome.
Definitely. Definitely give us a call or go to our website and check it out.
Yeah. And if you're listening on the podcast, it's again hslda.org, which stands for Homeschool Legal Defense Association. So, well, awesome. Thank you so much, Stacey, for everything you've had to share. This was an incredible conversation that just helped us to dive into some things on a different perspective that I really appreciate, because we can separate so much the medical needs and the family needs and the education needs. And you kind of gave us a beautiful picture of just how all that can interplay with one another. And I appreciate that.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Yeah. Well, we just encourage people to like Stacey said, reach out to her and reach out to HSLDA and the services that they offer, and really the freedom, your freedom to homeschool that they protect. We are grateful for them. And just thank you for the work that you do through them, Stacey. 30 hours a week, I told her at the beginning when we were talking, that's a long time during the week to be a consultant. You talk a lot.
Be talking, yes. Talking yes. and writing emails. But
and
yeah,
encouraging.
It is. Yeah. But it's a gift to be able to encourage others and hopefully just be a support. I mean, our goal is just to make sure everyone is thriving in their homeschool journey, and everybody's looks different. So there's no one size fits all. I don't want anybody to think that, but we just want to help you wherever you are and make it happen the best we can for you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's what's most, that's the wonderful thing about homeschooling is we can make it, make it whatever we need, whatever our children need. And so, so yeah, thank you for that reminder. And also thank you for our audience for joining us on this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. This broadcast is sponsored by viewers like you. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to Sped Homeschool, we are a 501c3 nonprofit. You can visit our website at spedhomeschool.com and then just click donate. Otherwise, if you go to our website, you can click Need Homeschool Help, and you'll find a lot of it there as well. So, yeah. And then next week, we are going to be talking about home educating children with chronic illnesses from a homeschool mom practitioner who homeschooled her own children with chronic medical issues and also does a lot of like natural types of medicine. So she's going to kind of dive into that from both sides. So you'll want to definitely stay tuned for that. But that will continue on this topic of homeschooling and medical needs. And so stay tuned, same time, same place here. And thank you again, Stacy, for sharing with us. It's been great. I've enjoyed this hour immensely. And thank you all for your comments and up on and questions. We appreciate your involvement too. And we'll see you again next time. So thanks, right. Everybody.
Take and care.
Yes, bye-bye. Bye.
The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art, inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.